Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good.
American.
After out of Charleston, South Carolina, with the most the radio chick, Annie, along with my oh-so-intellectual, so-politically powerful co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio and Kinetic Hi-Fi for Tuesday, February the 11th. Annie, if you'll tap your mic and shake it up, I think those kittens got into it again. Glad to be with us on another exciting, exciting show. I'll tell you, the political business is like, it's like one of them 24-hour stop-and-goes or 7-Elevens. There's always traffic and always a story when it comes to the political world.
That it is. Is this a little bit better?
Yes, that's much better. I'll tell you, sometimes some shows, we could do a show almost every day. I'll bet you out of 100 times, 97 times, not even have a topic. But just with politics by its own would carry the news, and I know we're going to do a show dedication. But as always, at Boehner, he bent over again on the debt ceiling. What a we'll get into that.
Yeah,
spineless wimp.
Yeah, and that happened in just the last few minutes. And I got to tell you, today is going to be one of those days. I have problems right now. BTR is working on some issues that we're having at this moment with this show. Some things are whacking. I swear there are trolls inside this computer somewhere. I'm telling you, it is weird things are happening today. Hopefully we will be able to have our guests join us. We are expecting C. Carl Smith, who wrote a book, excellent book, and founded. He's the founder of the Frederick Douglass Republicans. When I last spoke to him, he had a really bad flu, and there seems to be some sort of a bad flu floating around. I know when I had it, it hit me for 2 weeks straight. And I didn't even know how I managed to do the show with the flu, but it's hitting a lot of people. So, folks, It's crazy weather out there, so just be careful. So hopefully he'll be able to join us. If not, we just send him some prayers and hope he feels better soon. But
certainly,
the road must go on. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't you supposed to be inside a courtroom having the time of your life today?
Well, actually, I will explain. That is, it's going to be Friday. This is a county commissioner. I am in the city of Grand Rapids, the county of Kent in Michigan. Well, this individual is a county commissioner, so they moved it to another county called McCosta County because they were a little bit concerned that maybe he may get a biased trial, or his trial would not have been unbiased, or I don't understand all the legal ramifications. But when I got there, there were a bunch of people that I knew standing around when they had mentioned that the trial is, or it's, he already went before and did his plea. So on Friday, he's going to do whatever it is, whatever they do. So I will not be with you on Friday, but I am with you today.
Oh, well, you're going to miss a great show Friday.
Well,
great
I
show
wish
Friday.
I could,
Friday is
it was,
Krista Branch.
Yeah, I would have loved to make it, but you should see that just for a little county commissioner, almost like a little circus within a circus, but embezzling from the Catholic Church. You know, I think people love these trials, Annie. I think they love who's sleeping with who, who's stealing from who, who's cheating on who. You know, it's the world we live in.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, those that are joining us, welcome aboard. I see a lot of our friends up in the chat. We want to say hi to all of them, you know, Avon, Bigfoot, and Ken. And to those that are listening in, I want to welcome aboard. We start each show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication doesn't go out to just one hero. It actually goes out to an entire regiment. And this is a little-known story, and we really don't have any music to play in background for this that I can think of that's appropriate or anything. So we're just going to go the way it is. This dedication today is going to go out to the 1st Kansas Colored Infantry, who on October 27th, 1862, fought in the Battle of Island Mound, Missouri. And this is from the Kansas City Star, and was dated October 25th, 2002, 2 years ago. Black soldiers for 1862 valor finally recognized at Missouri site, written by Maria Rose Williams and slightly edited by yours truly. The golden prairie grass pasture here, 70 miles south of Kansas City, was quiet except for a whistling wind and the distant growl of a tractor. Approximately 200 people gathered on the spot about a mile up a gravel-covered Bates County Road off Missouri 52. A band played patriotic music, dignitaries spoke, and a flag was raised as the state dedicated this farmland as a historic site. A bronze plaque was unveiled on a stone monument at the edge of this field, which had been transformed into a state park. Here, in the old Toothman Farm, the 1st Kansas Colored Voluntary Infantry set up headquarters 152 years ago, calling it Fort Africa. Just a few miles to the south, these black men, the 27th, 1862, a group of black soldiers had set up on a foraging expedition from Fort Africa. As they crossed over a low hill called Island Mound, the Union men encountered Confederate forces and engaged in a fierce and bloody clash. It would later be said that those black soldiers, quote, fought like tigers, unquote. Eight members of the unit were killed, including one white officer and one Cherokee. The six black soldiers and the Native American were buried in the field. 11 other men were wounded. Rebel losses are unknown, but some historians speculate that as many as 40 were killed. To date, despite state-funded archaeological digs, no soldiers' remains have been found. Archaeologists have unearthed an old well believed to be used by John Toothman and his family, maybe even commandeered to quench the thirst of the 1st Kansas Colored. They also found some small artifacts from the era, but nothing marking the battle, said Bill Bryan, director of the Missouri State Parks. We haven't done a comprehensive survey of the property yet. This was a running battle, and we may very well find other artifacts in the future. In 2009, Bates County Presiding Commissioner Donna Gregory was on several occasions, drove state visitors and others to the battle site. There were no benches, walking trails, or water fountains then. The idea of marking it as a historic site was still being considered by decision makers at the Department of Natural Resources. We have been working towards this dedication for a lot of years, and it has been an extraordinary journey, Gregory said. It will be Missouri's first battle place dedicated as a state historical site since 1990, when the Battle of Carthage in Jasper County was recognized. We always knew about the Battle of Island Mound, but it was location that we didn't know about until after local interests brought it to our attention, said Jim Rehard, a district supervisor with Missouri State Parks. Local historians used land documents and a military report written by Major Richard Ward, an officer of the 1st Kansas Colored, to confirm the battle place. Once the battle location was pinpointed, the state of Missouri spent a lot of time and energy on this project, Reihart said. The state bought 40 acres of the old 80-acre farm for the park in 2008, and an archaeological workshop was held in the property in 2010. Prairie grass was planted in 2011. In 2012, Missouri park workers transformed the area, setting benches, building a shelter, and wrapping a half-mile walking trail around the site. I think it's very important to African Americans in Kansas City, in the region, and throughout the country, said Joe Maddox, who manages the historical items at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Center. The 1st Kansas Colored Soldiers were the first to fight and the first to die on the battlefield at that time, when most northern generals thought black men could not be trained as soldiers, Maddox said. Dedicating the Butler Farm as a historic site adds another monument to the contributions that African Americans in Missouri make to this country, said Maddox. Chris Tabor, who told the story of the battle in his 2001 book, Skirmish at Island Mound, was thrilled when he learned the site was being preserved for history. Tabor, a former Missourian who now lives in Houston, began researching Island Mound in 1999. I'm still studying this 1st Kansas Colored even now, Tabor said. It's a hobby, a passion, and an obsession. But this is really so significant. These men, some of them weeks out of bondage, others just days out of bondage, proved that former slaves could meet their enemy on the field of battle and defeat them. This is a full 9 months before the Massachusetts 54th, the black regiment in the movie Glory, stormed Fort Wagner. Tabor said that after President Lincoln heard an account of the Island Mound fight, it affected his decision to officially muster black soldiers into the war. It affected his decision to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. The new state park and historic site marker for the battle is the second monument in Bates County, paying homage to this black Civil War soldier. A statue of a black soldier stands outside the county courthouse in Butler. This show is dedicated to these brave men of the 1st Kansas Colored, and it is dedicated to all men and women who have served, who are serving, and who will serve, either in the military uniform or as first responders. We dedicate the song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Green. God bless America.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. For those who need me, I'll always be here. For those who will harm me, I'll face without
trying to knock things over on my desk. Oh, well, it's Todd Allen Herndon. My name is America. The reason why I knocked everything over on my desk, I was reaching for the CD of this song that I have a signed autographed copy right now in my hand. So, Mike, I think maybe later on we'll do something where we'll give it away to one of our listeners. How's that sound?
Yeah, always sounds good. You say free to our listeners, you know what happens.
So it'll encourage everyone to...
the Kmart.
Encourage everyone to keep on listening, and then we'll do maybe a call-in or something towards the end of the show, and we'll just pick a random number, whoever it is, you know, and we'll give the CD away to them. Does that sound good?
Yeah, always sounds good. Well, you know, before our guest calls in, or if he can, they're pushing back Obamacare, the debt ceiling's rising. The GOP is so spineless. Just they're just so gutless. On this, they just totally folded. I mean, at least they can do is put up a fight.
Yeah. He gave this great speech, I think it was yesterday, about standing the line and this and that, and sounded really good. And I'm saying, gee, Boehner, maybe you did find your spine. You didn't leave it, you know, over there with the jellyfish bowl. But sure enough, just a matter of minutes before we went on the air, he caved again. He caved again. Well, listen, I want to bring up an issue that's really, really firing up right now. It's going viral up on Facebook. And there's a link to it in the chat room placed up there by Jay Ubellis. There's a video out there, and if they click on this link, you can read the story in American Military News. And it's been going around the last couple of days, and Fox has carried it and so forth. This veteran, Yancey Bear, has a service dog. When he was serving in Iraq, he had gotten an injury to his leg, and when they went to work on him on the injury, they discovered he had bone cancer. And they ended up amputating his leg. So consequently, because of everything he went through, he now requires a service dog. So he's going into this Starbucks in Houston, Texas, and the employee at the counter stops him at the door and is not letting him in and is yelling at him, harassing him, berating him, basically saying, you're not blind, so what do you need a service dog for? Why don't you act like the rest of us and be normal? This is to a service vet. Not only that, a cancer survivor. And then the guy stood his ground. God bless him. He stood his ground, and he made them allow him to go into the store with the service dog. And he read the Employee Right Act. But you listen to the story and how here he is. He's suffering not only just from this cancer and his injury and PTSD. He said he felt extremely nervous, as if he was under attack. So now, Starbucks, he goes in there, he gets his coffee and whatever else he got, something to eat, pay. Instead of the manager going, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, I apologize, this should never have happened, makes him pay for his stuff. Instead of saying, no, here, it's free, it's on the house, just to show you our goodwill. The employee was wrong, it's goodwill. No, they don't do that. They add insult to injury. On top of that, Starbucks corporate issues an apology that is so hollow, so false, so phony. They basically said, oh, we're so sorry, we did reach out to him, we apologize. They didn't offer him anything. They didn't offer, you know, to sit down with him. They didn't offer anything. They basically said, this is a teachable moment. We're going to add it to our training materials. Now, that said, Mike, you know, when I say that I'm wrong about something, I am wrong. While this started a trend, I was saying I'm going to boycott the corporate, not the franchises. Well, what I didn't know is the individual Starbucks stores are not franchises. They are part of the main corporation, but they are run and managed locally. So that said, I stand corrected. They are not franchises. But I said I am going to boycott any of the corporate products that you see in the stores. If you go into, like, your local grocery store in the coffee section, you'll see Starbucks stuff. I'm not buying it. That's who I am boycotting. I'm not boycotting local stores. So that said, but can you believe this, Mike?
Yes, I've been boycotting Starbucks since 9/11, since they refused to give free bottled water to the first responders. You know, there is a Starbucks en route very close to where the Twin Towers were, and someone ran in and needed some cases of bottled water. They basically said, told them to F off, and I've boycotted Starbucks ever since. Starbucks is very much, at least it gives the appearance to me, that they are a country that hates everything America stands for, and they're more like just a standard transnational pimp company making its money here in the States. At least I've been boycotting Starbucks going on, 9/11 was how long ago? 2001. I've been boycotting since. I won't even go in there for Wi-Fi. They charge you for Wi-Fi, by the way.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm trying to get up in the chat room the link. I'm putting up in the chat room the link to the Facebook conversation if anyone wants to go in there and take a look at the Facebook conversation. But this has been going back and forth the last 2 days. And I only saw it today because when I opened up my Facebook page, I see this big red heart and Starbucks saying, you know, gift cards and this and that. And I'm going, all right. And then I see his post directly underneath, and I started reading it. And I'm going, wow. And then I did a little internet search, and he's been up on several different news stations, and Fox being one of them just yesterday. So this is still going on, folks. You know, the way that some of these corporations treat our military, our veterans, our disabled is absolutely reprehensible. And you know, Mike, I will not walk into a Best Buy. When they sponsored that CARE convention out in Kansas City, I believe, I said, you're sponsoring that is actually being attended by our enemies, people that have direct ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda and other Islamic terrorist groups, and you are going to sponsor their convention? You're not. Forget it. And Best Buy, Starbucks, sorry. Sorry. Not going to have anything to do with you. And I have yet to see them say anything publicly, saying, all right, fine. This is more than a teachable moment. Maybe we'll donate money to help get more of these service dogs out there for our disabled people. You know, let's get more service dogs. Let's donate enough money, say, for 100 dogs. They can afford it. Why don't we donate something to the PTSD retreats? Send something over to the Wounded Warrior or to the Independence Fund. But you don't see any of that action. You see a corporate response that's saying, oh, our bad, and it's going to be a teachable moment. Weak. Wimps.
Yeah, well, last I knew, Howard Schultz was their, he was like their CEO. He if you Google him, he's just got all kinds of, he's thrown out all kinds of letters out there and whatever. Oh, we're so sorry about this situation. Almost all these situations pertain to them at no shape and time, or basically Starbucks in no way, shape, or form assisting, helping, doing anything for a veteran or for seniors. I mean, it's just clearly a company. I mean, it's just not a good sound. It's an American company, meaning it's from America, but it's very unpatriotic. I would go as far as to say that I believe Howard Schultz may indeed be somewhat of a one of those slow socialist types, but just an opinion. And he's also, you know, he's also an Oprah fan and blah, blah, blah. Take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, unfortunately, they get their heads up their corporate asses. And, yes, you heard me say that, their corporate asses. And they don't even smell their own shit anymore. Now you can tell that I'm pissed. Because if I start cursing, then you know I am royally pissed. Hey, listen, we're going to open up our call-in line so people can call in and comment on this. 917-889-3675. Catgirl has some great comments in there. You know, what gets me is that some of the bases have these Starbucks on there. And if you have such an anti-military corporate mindset, why the heck would you be on a military base? You know,
his dad, the owner, his father was an Army guy. He's from your neck of the woods, either Long Island or Brooklyn or Stan. You got to Google him, but I did. You know, he used to be like a big shot with Xerox, and I mean, he's definitely moved up the ladder, but he's just clearly these. I'm not mistaken, he did own the Seattle basketball team of the NBA, the Supersonics. But anyway, either way, a lot of these conflicts just appear to be somehow, some way, his employees disrespecting, you know, our servicemen and women or our first responders. You can only have this situation happen so many times before there's really a clear-cut fact of contempt for American veterans. I mean, it's just that simple. Can't even deny it if you wish to.
Yeah, well, what gets me is that it was not, you know, he wasn't wearing anything to say that he was a veteran. And he's got the dog that has the little covering on the dog around his torso that says he's a service dog. You know, and I know several people with service dogs. And it's not just for blind people, folks. You know, service dogs can help people with epilepsy because they sense the seizures before the person knows they're going to have a seizure. It helps other people with other different types of conditions that before they go into a full-blown whatever episode, the dog senses this and is able to get them help or to alert the person, hey, listen, you got to take your medication. You know, service dogs also, for people that are amputees, will open doors and drawers and things. It helps people with PTSD so that when they start having one of their episodes in PTSD, the dog can help calm them and help protect them. It's not just for blind people. There are so many things these marvelous, marvelous animals do. And one of my friends, she's got a service dog, and she has always helped, you know, because she worked in a senior home, and now she is at that stage in her life where she needs the service dog. And recently she had an episode where she fell. Thank God for the service dog. You know, the ignorance and the bigotry that you have facing not just veterans, but anyone who's disabled is frightening, absolutely frightening. Now, we do have a caller coming in. Let me see if I can bring this person in on the line. Area code 267, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
Yeah, my name is John. I'm calling from Pennsylvania.
Hi, John.
Hey,
how you doing?
John. Long time no talk to. How you doing, buddy?
All right. You know, Starbucks is more of a fast food type franchise. A lot of the people that work there, they're college students, and they're just mixing different coffees together. And there's not a lot of room they put in those restaurants that they have. But if they're not sensitive to people who are disabled and veterans, then they should be called out about it. But I guess, you know, he has, whoever owns it, he has so many stores now. So he, you know, he has kind of chain that can't be broken, so he feels like he's invincible.
Well, my point was, all of these incidents that we're talking about, it began in 2001, where, as I said, they refused to give bottled water. They were going to make somebody pay for it, and I believe it was a first responder who just ran down there to get water for whom I don't remember the situation. But it appears like every time something like this happens, it is something to do with anti-veteran, anti-military. And I think you're right. He's got so many franchises that really, it's hard to break the chain, but you need to call him out on it.
Absolutely. Right. And Ken's got a good point. Ken and I wrote up in the chat room, he says, let me be clear. A woman who is only famous because she will inherit a fortune can bring a cute little mutt in a bag. But a man that has served our nation must stand. Very good point, Ken. I like that.
Well,
I think
I don't know if that would happen if it happened in a McDonald's or some other fast food type place, whether you get the same treatment happening or not. Because a lot of the people that work in those places, they're not well trained. They're just there temporarily. They're trying to get a paycheck. I think the advantage with Starbucks is Starbucks actually gives the employees some type of health insurance, whereas if you're with McDonald's or some other fast food type franchise, they don't give health insurance. So that's the Starbucks gets a lot of college students as employees.
Well, I don't know about that health insurance with McDonald's, because I have a friend of mine up in New York that works at McDonald's, and she does get health insurance through them. So I guess it depends
on what type of
an employee you are.
The main question is, well, either way, the benefits is not kind of the topic. The topic is that whenever the cafe seems to make the news, it almost, at least to me, seems in 100% negative towards veterans. Not just a disrespect. Because we know younger people are younger people. Sometimes they're stupid and they do dumb things. But it just seems like a complete, from the top down, from Howard Schultz, almost an indoctrination to his employees of a contempt of our veterans. And
it's probably an overall contempt of disabled people, period.
That's what I was trying to say, John. Because you know what? It's funny. You know, Mike knows that I am disabled. There's certain things I can do, certain things I can't do. You know, so I'm looking probably in a few years down the road, I may end up needing some sort of a service animal. And, you know, Lord knows, I don't know. But if you look at me and I'm walking down the street, you say, oh, she looks perfectly normal, until you got to actually know me. So for this individual to assume, because he looked perfectly normal, that something wasn't wrong. You know, I don't have full use of my right arm. And I was walking into a store one day, and I was actually wearing a back brace that was on the outside of my clothing. And I couldn't hold the door for the person behind me because I don't have the physical strength to keep the door open. It's painful for me. I had this person snap at me and calling me rude. And here you can see I'm wearing this device on my back. It's obvious. But, you know, people's attitudes towards those who are disabled is frightening. I don't think people understand what it is, what it means to be disabled. They don't know the difficulties that we go through. Now, I happen to have been unfortunate, to be honest about it, and maybe it makes me a little bit more sensitive. But I grew up in a family where both of my grandmothers were severely disabled, and they needed constant help and care. I mean, one had been in a train accident when she was a young woman, and she lost part of her arm. She had a plate in her head and everything. She spent 7 years in the hospital going through operations. And I knew what it was like to having to help her bathe and to dress, and when she had to do things around the house, to do them for her. My other one was severely disabled because of arthritis, and she was bedridden and ended up having several hip replacements. So I know what it's like to have to see these individuals and the pain they go through. But when you cannot physically see it on the outside and someone assumes because you got a service dog, you're just milking the system, is disgusting. Because you have to be able to walk in that person's shoes.
Right. That's problem. People don't have any kind of empathy for other people today. The levels of, like in terms of the sympathy and the empathy for people that are less fortunate than you is starting to decrease in society, because people are so in a sense of detachment because of technology. They're texting all the time. They're looking at tablets. They're talking on the cell phone, and it's almost like they're in their own world.
I mean, do people talk on the cell phones anymore? I thought all they do is text.
Right.
That's the whole thing. We've become desensitized, as you said. You know, look at these kids that end up with these violent acts. They see these games that they play, and they say, oh, let's try it out for real. You know, they don't, as you said, have the empathy for a fellow human being. And I guess the more we get technologically savvy, the more we end up disassociating ourselves in society. And here we are. We're talking over the air. We're talking over telephones right now on the show. Instead of sitting down face-to-face having a conversation with someone, you know, people hide it in their homes, and they forget what it means to interact with another human being. And should they interact, they don't know how or what to say. They don't understand how to feel what the other person is feeling.
Right.
This is something that is a problem with our society. And we do have another caller coming in. Let me bring this person in on the air. Erica 202, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to?
Hello, this is Ken McClanton, the host of the Exceptional Conservative Show.
Love you, Ken.
What's
thank
up,
you,
Ken?
I love you all. Mike, what's up?
What do we owe? If I got to stand up and bow, to what do we owe you, Grace, a big shot like you, your big time show, gracing the little old Southern Sense with Annie and Mike.
All hail Ken. All hail Ken.
Oh wow. You guys kill me. but in a serious note, I was listening. Unfortunately, I'm at work and can't always participate, but I was listening to the matter of Starbucks, and Annie provoked me, and I wanted to make this phone call, and certainly to acknowledge the fact that a man who gave up his constitutional right to serve, to protect the constitutional rights of individuals who are back at home, is tossed out of a Starbucks because he has a service dog, yet you have Kim Kardashian and any of the other little feminazis strolling with little mutts in their little purses, and a mocha latte is the least of the things that they're given. I'm just appalled at this, and a boycott isn't enough, really, but I certainly am going to tell people on my show tonight to avoid. I won't tell them to boycott, but I will certainly tell them make better choices in terms of getting your coffee elsewhere. It's absolutely ridiculous, and it needs to be viral at this particular point, and people need to make certain that individuals who have served this country have done all that they possibly can do. Some have given limbs, some have given hearts and organs, done all that they could to protect us from enemies foreign as well as some domestic. How dare some capitalists decide all of a sudden that he is morally...
Don't put down capitalists, because I'm a fast capitalist. What you're talking about is a corporate crony,
but
a snot-nosed kid.
You know, Kenny's right. Can you imagine if this were a Latina or a black person, you'd have La Raza, Sheila Jackson, Lee, and all them all over. Here's a veteran. I mean, regardless of whatever skin color he is or nationality, he's a veteran of our service. He is obviously in some way handicapped for the service that he is given. And some little punk, I'll tell you. Starbucks, this happens. They continue with Starbucks. But the fact of the matter is the owner will not come out and outright address it as fact. But it doesn't seem like McDonald's, or it doesn't seem like Big B Coffee or whatever other type franchises, restaurants or whatever, have this type of problem on a monthly basis.
Not at all. Not at all. And literally a foot. And I must apologize. Catholic service definitely not endeared to the owners of Starbucks, as they have come against individuals who believe in God, guns, and drinking coffee in private. Certainly, this institution is the bane of capitalism and certainly the bane of constitutional law. I believe with all of my heart and soul that an apology, a sincere apology directly from the chairman and CEO of Starbucks is the least, an absolute least that they could possibly do to bring retribution to this matter.
Absolutely, and that's what I've been pointing out, because as soon as I posted it up on this, on the Starbucks page on Facebook, within about 5 minutes, I had a spokesman responding back, and they gave one of those hat corporate answers. Now, trust me, folks, I worked for American Express. I was associate manager at one point. I know what the corporate world is about. I've owned businesses, and I know how I would have treated the customer had this happened in any place that I had either owned or managed. That person would not have paid for his coffee and donut or Danish or whatever he got, would not have paid for them. I would have turned around and offered, probably for the next year, you have whatever you want free here. You know, bring in your buddies, and we'll serve them free, just as our way of saying we're sorry this should never have happened. I would have had the corporate office say, hey, listen, where does he get his service dog from? Why don't we donate enough to help to train some more of these dogs so they can purchase the dogs and train them and then give them out to the disabled veterans and disabled individuals? Let's do something to show that we, as a corporation, are also socially conscious and willing to give back to the community. You notice how you have conservative businesses have a tendency to individuals, conservatives alone, give more donations to charities and do more charitable work than do progressives and liberals. Now you've got a progressive, liberally owned business, Starbucks, which ends up spitting in this veteran's face. And I think the biggest insult was they made him pay for his coffee and food. You know, here you just insulted me, and then you make me pay. I'm of the to get insulted.
I'm of the opinion that every veteran in America should provocatively spend the day outside of a Starbucks educating the American citizen on what they give up to serve. And quite frankly, we're sending the best of the best. Only 2% of all Americans ever will qualify to become a part of the military. And we're sending the very best of the best. And the worst thing that we can do when they come back home, first, we don't throw parades for them. We don't celebrate them. Some of us don't even buy them something at the airport when they get off the plane. But they come back home, all they're looking for is a job and just to get their lives back together, and this is how I'm treated. It's reminiscent of how my uncle came back from the war, Vietnam War, and many of them told of stories of where they were spat on coming out of the airport, and people hissed at them as child killers. And none of those stories were true. The least that we can do for those who have given up their lives subjected their lives to such a risk of loss is to love and obey them, and obey them in the sense of providing the greatest service that we possibly can to them for the service that they gave to us.
Absolutely, absolutely. You give me chills when you were just saying that, because as you know, I'm the granddaughter of a World War I veteran. I am the daughter of a World War II veteran. I'm the ex-wife of a Vietnam veteran. My father-in-law served in the Latvian army when it was being invaded first by the Germans and then held prisoner of war under the Russians. You know, his mother watched her brothers being slaughtered in the field because they refused to work for the Russians. They refused. So, I mean, we know what these people have given up. We know. And I'm not saying that we go out and boycott every single Starbucks. I'm going to say if you have been treated bad in one of them, if you know of a service member or a disabled person that has been treated bad in one of them, do not go into those stores. If that store posts on their outside, which is what I put up on the Starbucks site, I says, if you as a store manager have given good service and honor our military and help our disabled, then put a sign up in there saying, we welcome and support our veterans, our active military, and the disabled public. And we welcome you to come in, and we're offering you, say, 10% off for the next month or so, just to say thank you. And we appreciate you. And that way you have good community relations, and you also get more customers because they'll see that sign. But instead, you hear nothing. You hear cockroaches, not cockroaches, you hear the crickets coming from corporate Starbucks.
Well, in Washington, D.C., we do have hissing cockroaches, so I understand exactly. Some of them are politicians.
That's a Freudian slip.
But in all sincerity, most certainly, and you know, but I wonder what sign they would be giving the Obama administration if they came out and said we're going to donate a percentage of all of our sales for a day to wounded warriors. You know, when are you going to start showing respect to the men and women that serve us best? And I just want to thank you also, Annie, before I go off the air. I want to thank you so much for playing that segment, or speaking to the segment of the Civil War heroes, the regiment that lost, that were lost as a result.
I think we lost Ken. I think Ken's phone just dropped. You know, Ken, no problem. I mean, I feel that we can never do enough honor and homage to these brave men and women and this regiment that probably no one ever heard of except for anyone living in that small area of Missouri and probably never would have heard of unless they built this park monument. And I want to thank the people in Missouri that stood up and said, hey, these guys need to be recognized. And imagine, think about this, Mike. They're going up against the Confederate forces, and they've got this small, brand-new troop. They haven't even had a battle yet. They only have 8 losses, and the Confederates had over 40. I mean, those were, you know, fighting tigers, you know, and they maybe should have had that nickname. And they were disbanded immediately after the Civil War in 1865, so no one has anything else for them. This is it, this one monument. And I'm glad this other gentleman wrote the book about it back in 1999. So, Ken, anytime. And if you know of anyone, Ken, you'd like me to honor, just shoot me a little email, and I'll be happy to do them. I mean, to honor them. That didn't come out right, did it? Okay, is anyone else out there? Mike? Okay. Am I here all by myself? John?
Yeah, like I said, I think that it should go through the store manager first, and then sometimes these stores have district managers where, you know, each store is in a particular district, and then the complaint goes all the way to the top. But I think because the chain is so big, the CEO of the company probably doesn't care. So he needs to be made mindful of the type of treatment he's giving people in his stores.
Well, not to mention, I mean, if it happens over and over and over and over and over, then it becomes a problem, and I apologize. I muted myself. Just a quick comment, kind of a subject change, John. It appears that you're in Philly, aren't you, John?
Yeah.
You're gonna be having royalty show up, I believe, in May. The Pope is coming to visit Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So that's going to anyway, debt ceiling now. Well, John and I used to talk a lot about this, Annie, when we were with Perry Steele. But, I mean, here we go again. Again, the debt ceiling. More and more and more. Sooner or later, this credit card mentality is just going to implode us. I mean, I don't know how much longer we have. We may have a day. We may have a million more days. But for heaven's sake, sooner or later, we have got to get spending under control.
Well
I heard an economic report. What's happening in terms of the stock market is that the reason why the stock market continues to rise is because of the Dodd-Frank bill that the brokers on Wall Street have access to money that's coming out of the bank deposits out of all of the commercial banks. So basically, they have an unlimited supply of capital. And this is what is causing the market to rise. And we already know about the printing of money that's been going on, and they recently changed the Secretary of the Treasury, and she intends to continue this policy.
So this is going to lead
to an economic collapse eventually. And also you have the student loan problem. You don't have enough jobs that are coming about each month, and you have people who are graduating from college, and the average student loan debt is over $200,000 per person. And what's eventually going to happen is you're going to have a situation where it's going to be where a lot of these loans are going to default, and they're all going to default at once. And when that happens, that's going to be greater than the housing crisis was.
Yeah, well, you have to throw in there also this new cockamamie plan that came up with this MyRA, this thing where you end up having the government give you, let you invest in a government IRA plan. That really works very well with Social Security, huh? That worked well with a lot of government. Can we say post office here, guys? So what the government's going to do is say, all right, fine, we'll hold this IRA that you're going to get, and you can invest money in, which wouldn't pay a very large return. I think it's less than 1% is the return. I can get more going in and cashing my coins in the grocery store than that. But they got to control now your savings. So they're going to have to say, all right, fine, there's going to be a lockbox on MyRA like there was on Social Security. But the government's going to be able to tap it. They're going to be able to say, all right, we'll hold your money for you, and we'll give it back to you when we decide to, basically. Then they're going to go say, all right, fine, we got MyRA here. Why don't we get a hold of all of the IRAs now? Let's just nationalize the savings accounts. So, folks, watch out. They're going to go after the IRAs, then they're going to go after other investment accounts, and then they're going to go after your savings account. So soon, your money will not be your money anymore. Your work will not be work for yourself. It's going to be work for the government, and you'll end up into a form of slavery like you have never known before. So,
that's what happened in the city of Detroit in terms of the pension fund for people who work for the city. I heard of one case where a woman had worked over 30 years as a worker with the city, and now her pension is only something like $700 a month, and she put in 30 years.
Who can live off that?
And the reason why that's happening is because they're going through a bankruptcy hearing, and they can't afford to pay the pensions anymore that people work for.
What happened in Detroit is a total farce. We had a potential mayor. We had a mayor candidate. The governor of Michigan is a complete corrupt socialist. Rick Schneider is his name. He's a pathological liar and a sociopath. Detroit was not bankrupt. Detroit was solvent for many years. But it's a long story. But what is taking place is the following. This is what happens when state government takes over a local, and they null and void elections, and the political people that have been elected, like them or not like them, they were elected by the people. Well, the state can void them. This yesterday came to an end temporarily as a federal court of appeals has agreed to hear the appeal on the emergency manager, they call it. This was voted down by the voters, but most people, because they're stupid, and 9 times out of 10 they're Republicans that just follow leaders into a fire. Well, here's the bottom line, is that there are certain areas of Detroit that many of the supporters of the governor wanted. Beachfront property, riverfront property, et cetera, et cetera. We all know lakefront property is very valuable, and that's what this is all about. One of the areas taken over, they didn't even wait to take it over. They moved the bulldozers in to start building the golf course. But anyway, either way, these are the things that happen when you don't allow the market to take its place and government interferes. If Detroit was allowed to just do its own thing, eventually if they were bankrupt, they would have imploded or been forced into bankruptcy. Had they not, their business as usual would have continued. But these are the things that happens when government interferes. Government has never, under any circumstances, really, really helped the marketplace.
Well, once the automobile part of their economy in terms of manufacturing went away, they had to develop another type of business model to bring into the city, and they weren't able to do that in a fashion where it would save the economy of the city.
Yeah, well, there is no doubt that they were they're definitely lost population. I think at one point Detroit was the fourth biggest city population-wise in the United States. It's below 10 and higher than 20 now. So that's a clear loss in taxpayers.
Yep. Well, listen, Mike, I got a story here that I pulled up, and this story, you just can't make this up. Donnie pointed it out to me. I pulled it up, and I was absolutely rolling hysterically. Catch the headline. This headline is NAACP pushed rally ID requirement at protest against voter ID requirement. Did you catch that? The NAACP has a rally going on protesting voter ID requirement. But a requirement to participate in the rally is that they carry ID on them. They have to bring photo identification, a driver's license, passport, or other valid photo ID with you, and keep it on your person at all times. You can't make this up. You cannot make this stuff up. Now, this guy who's running this rally, William Barber, he's the head of the North Carolina NAACP. Now, I don't know if you remember, last year, Mike, he had this Moral Monday campaign. It was opposing Republican agenda in North Carolina, and it resulted in over 900 related arrests of activists back in 2013. So now he's got this moral march on Raleigh, and the invite to voter ID protest is that you have to have voter ID. Brilliant.
Well, the reason why they didn't want people to have IDs because they wanted the Mexicans who were not citizens to be able to vote. Were trying to control an election, to be able to bring all types of people who shouldn't be here able to vote in elections.
But the irony is at the voter ID protest, they were required to have photo ID on them. The very same documents they were protesting against not having to carry, they were told they must carry in order to participate in this rally. That's the complete irony and hypocrisy.
Right. there's a lot of things you can't do in life if you don't have any photo ID at all, in terms of cash a check or, you know, do other things, you know.
Enter a government.
If you don't
building.
Have any photo ID, but what they're saying is they don't want to make it a requirement that people have a state-issued photo ID, because they want the different types of illegal immigrants to be able to vote in elections without state-issued photo IDs. That's the whole kind of ulterior motive behind it.
Yeah, but then they require the people to participate in the rally to carry ID on them,
I don't think there's any question that when it comes to a lot of these groups, and it doesn't even matter if it's a minority group or whatever, there's all kinds of hypocrisy and hypocriticism going on, such as here's the law in my city of Grand Rapids in Michigan. Now, if I go up there, okay, and I say, okay, I'm Mike Elias, I want to vote, and Cool Mike doesn't work, so you got to give your name. And I say, okay, but I left my ID at home. All they do is give me a sheet that says, are you really Mike Elias? I check yes, and I sign it. Then I vote. It doesn't even, you don't lose your place in line. They just hand it to you as an addendum or whatever, an additional sheet, whatever they call that. And then you just, you know, as you move down the line, you eventually hand it to someone and you vote. So I can claim I'm American citizen John, and I can vote. I mean, it doesn't do anything. I actually wanted to come back. They knew who I was. My brother was out of town. I wanted to vote on my brother's behalf, but they knew who I was, so I couldn't. But I tried finding someone, and I actually couldn't. But, I mean, that is just what's different. As they say in the old days in Chicago, but they say a lot more in Russia now, vote early and often.
And often.
John, yeah, and I think in many, many ways what you see is you see a lot more of that going on. I don't think you see, like in Michigan, we got outright voter fraud. I mean, it's just so well known, and it's almost ignored. But in a lot of ways, John, wasn't it your town where the Black Panthers tried to intimidate people?
Yeah, they stood in front of a polling place, and they tried to encourage people to vote for President Obama.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you see a lot more of that. It doesn't matter the candidate, you know. Each candidate runs their own little individual little campaign. But I mean,
mm-hmm.
You see a lot more of that. People trying to intimidate, or I always use it when we have a guest here. When we have a guest on who's running for office on the show, I always ask them this question, and I said this again yesterday or the day before. No, last week, Thursday, there was a guy running, and his name was Tom Norton. And I said, Tom, what are you going to do if you're elected? And the governor puts his arm around you and says, son, I'm going to show you how you do things. He looked right at me. He says, I'm going to tell the governor to go stick it in his ass. And I says, well, we'll hold you to that. He says, you know, why don't you ask my former employer? He says, that's why I'm no longer employed there. So, I mean, I think that's my point. And the point is, it's up to us to defend that. You know, I like my congressman, Justin Amash. He's in the news a lot. He's a fighter. But ultimately, it's not Justin Amash that's going to...
Somehow or other, I got disconnected here.
I think that... No, I came from John. I just muted for a minute. Ultimately, it's not the Justin Amashes that are really going to change things. It's the Annies, the Mikes, the Germains, the American Citizens, and the Cats, and the ABCs, the Dr. Joneses. It's going to be us that are going to change things. And ultimately, if we're not willing to change it, then we may as well just give it up. Because it's like this. Government is always going to want to take and take and take and take. It's us that has to restrain them from that at all levels.
Yeah.
Anyway,
absolutely. For some reason or other, I got kicked out of the chat room the second time during the show, but I'm back in. But this is BTR is acting very, very weird on me today. I'm telling you, there's a troll around inside there.
Kenny Blanchard posted that tonight at 9:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Ken Blanchard will be his guest. He's running for... PG County in Maryland, council member.
Prince George. That's Prince George.
Yeah, I always we'll have to tune into that. I like listening to shows, especially on the local blog talks or whatever, where they have the local people running. Because I always like to know about different cities and municipalities. When you're listening to a congressman who's running or a state senator, that's or a U.S. senator, that's always great. But, you know, because the issues are all tied to the kind of the same thing. But when you listen locally, sometimes you could be listening to a council member run who's running just 25 miles from your house, and it's almost like his city is an entire different planet. The stuff that is going on in his city, it's so different. So I really enjoy that. So I'll definitely Prince George is a kind of, they're in the news all the time, too.
Yeah. When we were traveling back and forth between New York and here in South Carolina, when we were looking for a place, we would come down 13 and 17 and pass through Prince George. Always a nice,
well, let
quiet
me tell you,
area.
I have some friends that were many guests of the Prince George County, and they're in their in their hotel passing through. So,
well, we'll try to give a shout out to Kenny tonight on his show. I hope I'll be able to listen to it. We'll see what happens. Never know, moment to moment. Oh, man. Anyone that was listening, looking for Kay Carl Smith, he had come down with the flu, and I'd spoken to him earlier. He wasn't sure if he was going to be able to make it. And, guys, be careful if you're going out and mixing and mingling in crowds. There is a nasty flu going around, and it's knocking people out left and right. This is actually the second person. Our friend Joe Goldner, I sent a message to him earlier, and Joe Goldner is in bed. He says, I can't even talk. So now, there is a bad flu going around. So, folks,
Where I'm from, this is a wicked winter. I cannot even remember a winter like this. And, I mean, it is wicked. Even put it this way, Annie, even with our snowblower, the snowblower will not blow the snow high enough anymore because the banks are so tall. So you have to actually push it and push it towards a driveway and then out into the road.
Wow.
That's how bad it is.
Right. It's almost like the country is going through a mini ice age. I mean, currently Pennsylvania has had over 40 inches of snow, which is probably one of the highest on record in terms of its snowfall. And they have another storm that's coming on Thursday that's going to bring another 6 inches.
It started early, too. If you remember, I think it was in October or November, John, you remember when the Detroit Lions played Philadelphia in football.
Right.
It was like a foot or two of snow. It was sliding and falling everywhere. You couldn't even see the markers. But, I mean, I remember just after New Year's, this idiot, I don't even know why I listen to him anyways, but he says, well, we can look forward to the January thaw at least. Thinking it's February now, we can't get no thaw.
No.
It's wicked.
We got another caller coming in, and it's our friend Thomas. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Hey, Annie.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm pissed.
Uh-oh, what are you pissed at now?
All right.
Let's have that pissable moment.
Reason. It's for a different reason. May I read my little posting today that I posted? It's just kind of a short writing that I wrote. Annie, you know a little bit about my story, so I won't go into it, but I just wanted to read, just read something that kind of bubbled up in me after having a conversation with someone. Love them to pieces, but we don't always agree on there. So, anyway, and Mike, please forgive me ahead of time because it's an issue that I think it might frustrate you, but please forgive me and indulge me for a moment.
Read away, buddy. Read away.
Okay.
Testify.
All right. Is it okay to allow for a few deaths, with an S at the end of it, deaths, if it accomplishes the greater good? That is the prevailing thought among those who believe in pro-life legislation that contain provisions for rape, incest, and medical emergencies. So I pose this question. Do any of you who cling tightly to this viewpoint ever give thought to how those of us who were conceived in these circumstances actually feel? I didn't think so. Here's the point. Two things that I am sick and tired of. One, my fellow conservatives parroting the same tired mantra of fiscal issues are more important than social issues. A, when taxpayers are paying $500 billion a year to the largest abortion provider in this nation, abortion is a fiscal issue, so deal with it. Two, the extreme infighting between the exceptions crowd and the non-exceptions crowd. Please stop telling those conceived in rape or incest or under extreme medical conditions that their lives are worth sacrificing if it saves a larger number of babies. One more point that pro-lifers and AHAers fail to see is this. Without the infighting, planned execution hood wins either way it goes. They know most legislators will not fight for no exceptions legislation. So what do they do? They wait for the bills to be proposed with the exceptions in them, then they go right to the court. It is really amazing to me that the side that is supposed to be fighting for all life finds some lives worthy of sacrifice. The truth of the matter is this, exceptions legislation is just a tactic to avoid confrontation. The other side has made up their mind that no matter what legislation comes down the pipe, they will oppose it on some ground. That is why you see ads from the CEO of Planned Execution Hood talking to men about giving their wives and girlfriends an abortion for Valentine's Day. Yes, Cecile Richards actually posted that video 2 days ago. How did it come this far? Well, this is the end result of refusing to stand on biblical principles. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that you and your descendants may live. I thank God that his son Jesus saw me as a lamb, the exceptions, babies, going astray, worthy of leaving the other 99 and coming after me. I understand the thinking behind incrementalism. Unfortunately, though, those who support this method to ending abortion seem to think that those of us who were conceived under those conditions are supposed to lay aside our feelings for the greater good of the fight when they deem our lives less important than the others. I am one of those exception clause babies who got a chance at life. Unfortunately, if I was conceived today, I would not be alive.
That's true. It's true. And, you know, what really gets me angry is that now Planned Parenthood is a sponsor of Girl Scouts. So now
yep.
the Girl Scout cooks are selling the cookies now. So now you have those of us that love the Girl Scout cookies and want to help these young girls grow up to be productive women in our society. I mean, the Girl Scout teaches a lot of good moral issues, and they teach a lot of, you know, good skills to these young ladies. And then to have the Planned Parenthood step in, and basically what they're trying to do, I guess, is to destroy the Girl Scouts the same way
yep.
they did the Boy Scouts with the gay leaders.
What
the progressives are doing to some of our segments of society and some of our traditions is just reprehensible. I had a conversation with someone the other day, and they were talking about, you know, the abortion. They were pro-life, this and that and everything else. And I stopped and I said, can I ask a question? And they said, yeah. And I said, how do you feel about the death sentence in cases of crimes? Oh, I'm for the death sentence. Okay. You're not for killing an innocent child. I can understand that. But you're willing to take the life of another human being as an adult. And they said, you're still taking a human life. So they said, well, and I said, well, how do you justify it? How can you justify protecting life on one end and then taking it on the other? And they said, well, honestly, if I ended up on a jury, I cannot vote for the death penalty. That is a moral issue between my God and me. If government issues laws and government decides to take that life, that is government. That's basically what Christ was saying. Let government do its job. Government holds the sword.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that, though, Annie, and now I'm going to put on my Bible teacher hat for a minute. There actually, in the Bible, it actually says, whoever sheds the blood of man by the hands of man shall his blood also be shed. That is actually, see, a lot of people don't know how to, most pro-lifers, because they haven't really taken the time to really study out what it completely means to be pro-life. If they really did, they would have been able to go right to Scripture where it actually says, and it justifies the taking of life for the shedding of blood. So that, but whoever you was talking to didn't know that, because they may have thought you were just trying to trip them up. But no, that is a very good question. And here's the thing. Just because you're against the death penalty, though, and folks, this is what you got to understand, and this is what we as conservatives really have to understand. Just because someone's against the death penalty doesn't mean they're anti-conservative. I am for the death penalty, but that's because I can't stand rapists and child murderers and people like that. I would absolutely decapitate one of them if I could. So, you know, so that's just me. But, Annie, just because you have that stance, and this is my whole point, we argue over stuff that is so foundational. And here's the biggest kicker. The social issue and the fiscal issue, we are the only conservative liberals, it's conservatives, not liberals, who break those down into two separate issues. Folks, they divided us through their actions, and we, like a bunch of dummies, let them do it. So how are we going to change it? And that's my whole take on it.
Well, we have to change it as a group. First of all, for the black community,
yep.
And I know you and John can probably relate to this. The black community needs to organize itself in a group to as Thomas. You brought up a very good issue of Planned Parenthood. Most of Planned Parenthoods are set up in or around black communities. Throughout
yep.
the years since the founding of Planned Parenthood, generations of Negroes have been wiped out, and therefore
right.
it makes its voting power less and less. What you have seen
right.
in the last 20 years is a huge influx of Latinos who are getting all this attention now because basically politicians, being the scum that they are, want votes. So they'll give a lot more attention to the needs of a Latino person rather than a black person. And this is something
right.
in the black communities they need to do on their own. I don't know that you can prevent a business from opening, but you certainly can protest it, and you can certainly try to get members from around there not to patronize the business. Now, I'm not strictly just talking about Planned Parenthood, but other type businesses that we know go in there, such as a franchise
right.
that will close a mom-and-pop shop that has been around for 50 years, and you have third generation of employees. Just other type of things like that. We as community need to stick together. In our neighborhood
right.
here in Grand Rapids, they started their own black chamber of commerce because the chamber of commerce here in Grand Rapids has become so big, they don't even really give a crap about Playboy Energy business or a small store. They're only into the big stuff. So these people formed their own coalition. And I think that's great, and I think we need to do more of this. This is where the Jewish people got their empire from. They started their own co-ops. They started their own banks. Because people wouldn't do business with them. And you know
right.
what they did? They complain of, they started their own. And we need to do that in our own communities of all ethnicities and religions.
Well, you know what, Mike? It's interesting that you say that. And you, a student of history, you actually should remember what I'm about to remind you of, though. If you remember the urban renewal movements, and I know you remember this, Annie, back in the 60s and 70s, the businesses in the downtown cities, in the urban cores and stuff, they were black-owned businesses. But what happened? The progressives came in and said, hey, you know, sell your businesses to us and we'll give you money. You had a lot of black business owners in the 60s and 70s that sold their businesses thinking that they were going to be this urban revitalization, and instead they tore the businesses down and left vacant lots for many, many years. They did it in Cleveland. They did it in St. Louis, Kansas City, where I'm from. And ever since then, if you go into a black community, what do you see? You'll see a liquor stores, payday loans, in beauty supply stores. But those beauty supply stores, all those businesses, more often than not, are owned by Asians or people from the Middle East, Pakistan, or India. See, what we as a community, the black community, did, we sold our communities out. And now we're looking back now, hey, why aren't we owning the businesses? Because we sold them out. And now you have people who do not want to give us a foothold. The Koreans have the market on the beauty supply in a black community. And if a black-owned business tried to open up in there, they actually would get ran out because it's the Korean business owners that know the supplier. See, I mean,
you know, there's one big thing here, too, Thomas, because having lived through this and working in New York City,
what a lot of these Asian families would do, they would pool all their money. This is something different than what we would do. You know, we would turn around and we'd take out a loan or something like that, or build up enough funds in order to open a business. We think as individuals. They think as a group. So they would pool their monies, and they would have monies coming from the old country, whether it's from India or Pakistan or whatever it is. They would have old country money and people over here pooling all their money together. So it's not one single owner. It's an entire family, an entire group. So they're able to lower their prices. They're able to expand their services. And what they would also do is if they this is current U.S. law. And I have a gas station down the street from where I live that does this all the time. Every few years, they change the owner. And the owner is one of the members within the group. And that way, they can still stay as an immigrant, not as a U.S. citizen, but as an immigrant, and run that business. All they just do is pass it on to another family member. So every so many years, you see the name of the station gets changed. And they'll make it look like it's a whole brand new business. It's not. It's the same business. It just is going from one family member to the next. And that way they can stay within the United States as an immigrant, have all the benefits that come with this federal program that allows them to do this. They get tax breaks and things that an American business owner cannot use, have access to. And they have access to loans and other funds that we do not, as American citizens, have access to. This is all a federal program courtesy of your tax dollars. So when you see these foreign businesses and you see them change every few years, that's what they're doing. That is the dirty little secret. Hey, look, Mike, we're down to our last 7.5 minutes. I mean, this show has just gone. Unfortunately, we did not have our guest, and I wish, you know, you had been able to feel better and join us. But again, that flu is striking a lot of people. So I'll try to see if I can get a hold of him and get him to come back on. But we got some great shows lined up coming up, and you're not going to be with us on Friday. But we're going to have our gal, Krista Brandt.
Thomas, can you join her, Thomas, on Friday?
I'm always here. I always listen in.
Friday, call in, because I'll be gone. I'm going to – that court case I was supposed to be at got moved. And I just got an email, too, while the show's going on. I have to show up early. They're going to issue me a pass. Because a bunch of people, I'll tell you, media loves this. Now we all got to go through the metal detectors and blah, 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 all over an embezzlement. But this guy, if I get a chance to stand up and make a scene, I may be ending up in jail. So, Annie, keep that credit card handy. I may be calling for bail. Well, you know, and here, before, I know we're going to press for time, but here's a perfect example of a Republican who basically loves to call Tea Party people names, blah, 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 blah. You know, we all know the names that they call. Okay, so now he's arrested and charged with embezzling money from the Catholic Church. I mean, that's just another perfect example. I wasn't called a teabagger. I was called one of those names or whatever. But anyway, Friday.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Well, Friday we'll have
still waiting for my case of energy drink.
You and me both. You and me both. But we'll have Krista Brandt on Friday. She's got a new album that's going to be coming out shortly. So we're going to be talking about that. And then following next week on Tuesday, we have Dr. Mark Christian. He is someone that had gone from Islam to Christianity. And he's going to be talking about that, followed by C.L. Bryant. Reverend Bryant will be joining us. You know, he has that movie, Runaway Slave. So we got some great shows coming up. So
great. Well, you guys... You guys take over, and you know I'll join you a week from today.
Absolutely. Alrighty. Absolutely. So I want to thank everyone that has been joining us today. And, Mike, we're going to have to figure out how we're going to give away this Todd Allen Herndon CD, My Name is America. Think of something we can do that we can give this away. It's autographed by him. So got to come up with some sort of a game plan here.
Okay.
What does that sound?
I'll think on it for in the evening after our meeting today. Also, just a quick reminder for those who are listening in Grand Rapids, I'm setting up a website May 6th. The city is not only asking for taxes. Get a load of this, you guys. I'll have to hurry here because I know we're down to 4 minutes. Grand Rapids wants a lifetime tax. yes or no for a lifetime tax.
A lifetime?
A
how does that work?
A tax that you would pay, meaning that it never expires. They want an increase that's permanent. That would just, it lasts forever. So not
okay.
only when you die do you pay the tax, your kids will pay the tax. Those kids' kids will pay the tax. Those kids' kids will pay the tax. It is a tax for life.
There's no sunset clause in it at all.
Why? You know, why not just take your pants, your shoes, and have everyone walking around with their ding-dings hanging out? A tax for life.
Oh,
a tax that never expires.
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely. Our own county council is trying to figure out how to do a tax referendum. And they actually sat down with the finance committee and said, hey, listen, why don't you tell us what projects you'd like to have this tax cover? Instead of having a project already and saying, all right, fine, we need to do road improvements X, Y, Z. We need to build this X, Y, Z, something specific, something that you've already got a financial plan for. And at that point saying, oh, in order to proceed with this project that you want us to do, we need to raise X amount of money, and this is how we propose a tax. So once we raise it and the project is done, the tax goes away. No. Tell us what you would like to have us do, and we'll figure out how to raise a tax for it.
Don't work that way, Annie. Annie, just shut up. Mind your own business. Get in line. Pay your taxes. And don't work that way. Why bother to ask people like you or I or Thomas? We're nothing more than a bunch of dummies anyways. Government knows what's best for us all.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, whatever politician referred to said something like politicians are prostitutes or whatever. I think it was Jefferson. Boy, they had it right on, and that was over 200 years ago. All righty, Annie. Well, back to you.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we will be back here again on Friday. Same bat time, same bat station. So be safe out there and be careful about the weather. Until then, good night.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good night.
Good afternoon.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Stand up, let's make it loud, Americans.